Welcome to our Enneagram Dessert Luck. So glad y'all could make it. Can anybody, I was trying to tell people to try to type me by my dessert, but I kind of made a sneaky dessert, so I'll have to talk about it later. Man, those desserts are pretty amazing. What do you think? Did anybody skip dinner and just on full on? You're just like going for the full on sugar crash. We're all going to be like crying in about an hour. It's going to be great. It's going to be so fun. Awesome. We're so glad y'all could make it. Got some lights there. Very cool. Real quick question. Let me ask, how many of y'all would say you've had some season of your journey where you've valued the work of self-awareness? Or how would... raise your hand first. Sorry. I was about to do two questions. Okay, cool. And then what's meaningful? If you could think of a couple, like a thought, like what's meaningful for you about that work of self-awareness? What have you valued about it? You can just shout it out.
Recognizing patterns.
Cool. So maybe like repeat them less often?
Or
responsibility? So kind of seeing your part a little bit more? Yeah.
Increasing self-worth.
Is that right? Yeah. That's pretty good. So you kind of can acknowledge maybe those weird aspects are actually kind of acceptable or there's a space. Yeah. Anything else come to mind? What's that?
Feeling freer to be
yourself. Freer to be yourself, yeah. You're like, oh, I don't have to be like this person. I can actually really enjoy the way I'm not that, or I am who I am. Yeah. What were you saying?
Change your priorities.
Yeah.
What you think is important in life.
Yeah. So it affects your priorities as you kind of get to know yourself a little bit better, can kind of dial into on your values. And yeah. Good, good. Anything else?
Having healthy relationships.
Yeah. Healthier relationships. Yeah. It's hard to relate when we don't know what's us and what's not us, right? So kind of knowing what's my part, you know, it's confusing as it is, but having no sense of self makes it even more confusing. Yes. That's what my wife tells me. She's not here. I'm going to try to be good. Any other things that come to mind? Not like usual. But Waylon's going to come up and we have kind of a cool thing tonight. We're going to do a bit of an intro as though, you know, you may have no understanding of what Enneagram is. You may be hearing the word for the first time. So we're going to kind of assume that there may be no exposure to this tool, which it is just a tool for self-awareness. And then we're also going to have a panel where we're going to talk a little bit about the way some people who've been using this for a while. So that'll be fun. And also give you an opportunity to ask some questions. So if you have some questions as you're kind of hearing the intro that Waylon's about to do, or if you've just had some questions about types or how to use this. But tonight we're also kind of trying to engage the question of why as a community are we valuing self-awareness, and why are we reaching for tools like this? And this is also kind of a springboard for our fall retreat, which is going to be taking a really deep dive into this. So we are super excited y'all are here tonight. So y'all give it up for Waylon. Woo-hoo!
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for coming out tonight. So who actually is familiar with Enneagram? Okay. So good number of you. I'll do a quick intro, and then I'll kind of run through the types so that everyone has sort of kind of language and just familiarity with what we're talking about when we talk about these types, Enneagram types. But literally, Enneagram means 9 points. That's what the word means. So, you know, when you see that image, just to clarify, it's 9 points, not 5, in case you were thinking some other image. And so we have 9 types. And it's a little different from your typical, you know, you have your Myers-Briggs test, which talks about personality styles. You have the DISC inventory thing, which talks more about how you behave. But with the Enneagram, it's more of a tool that focuses on sort of your motivation, kind of like your lens of how you perceive the world. So it's focused on how you engage and how you interact with the world and with people around you. Not too much is known about the original history of it. It is a very ancient tool. Some say from the Middle East, possibly from the Sufi kind of influence. There was some pre-Christian influence of that, I think, by the 4th century. Some of the Christian communities were integrating that within their communities. And for us here in the States, the Jesuits kind of brought that here probably in the 70s or 60s and 70s. So that gives you a little history. It's not, you know, super clear as far as the original place of where that kind of started. But so here's the diagram. And these are the 9 points. We're not going to go in too much detail tonight. We're just going to kind of give a high-level thing. But the lines in between do, indicate some interaction between types and things like that. But we're not going to talk about that tonight. But these are the 9. So the 1 is the reformer. The 2 is a helper. 3 is an achiever. The 4 is an individualist. 5 is the thinker. The 6 is a loyalist. 7 is enthusiast. The 8 is the leader type. And then 9 is the peacemaker. Okay, so I know you have your handouts, and hopefully you kind of glanced through some of that earlier tonight as you were chatting. But I'll just run through each type real quick to give some context for what they are. And then if you go to the next slide, actually, we talked about we did a short sermon series a few months back. And another helpful way of maybe subgrouping them is the types fit within the heart type, the head type, or the gut type. So you have the 2, 3s, and 4s are more the heart type. The 5, 6, and 7s are more the head type, and then 8, 9s, and 1s are the gut type. And that's what we talked about. That's kind of how we framed it when we did it a few months back. And just to help give a little more context, usually for the heart type, you know, if something like an unhealthy emotion that you feel is shame, that's kind of an indication that maybe you're a heart type. For the head type, it's maybe anxiety, if that's kind of your issue. And then with the gut type, it's usually anger. So that kind of gives a little more context maybe to help you filter into understanding what type you might be. But if we go to number 1, so the one type, the reformer, and what we've done here is basically, like, that middle section is a pretty good snapshot of what each type kind of, you know, how they function or how they perceive things. So usually there's something that they get stuck in. If they're unhealthy in an unhealthy place, that's what they get stuck in. The goal is what you're kind of moving towards if you're this type. And then there's always something that each type tends to avoid. But each type also has a gift that they bring to either people or the community. All right, so in each of these types, we're going to kind of key in on those things. But for the reformer, the one, like, goodness is what sort of describes them. They're all about high standards and quality control. They want to improve things, make things better. So usually it's something that when they're unhealthy, they get stuck in anger. That's kind of the emotion that they struggle with, where they want to move towards serenity. Something they always tend to avoid is imperfection. And so when we talk about things that are avoided, usually this is a good area of practice. So if you're like a 1, maybe a good practice for you is to practice failure, right? So if you tend to avoid imperfection, maybe it's something that you should actually engage with to become a little more healthy. And then the gift that they have to offer to people, to offer this community, is excellence, right? They're all about making things better, making systems better. I think maybe it might be helpful, occupation-wise. And again, this isn't, we're not saying all 1s are this, but possibly accountants, lawyers, right? So they're very detailed, they're very structured, they're very black and white on things, and they're always looking to improve things. So that's the 1. And there's a list of stuff you can look down there on your own as far as what are some of the more healthy expressions 1s have and then some of the more unhealthy. If we go to the 2, 2s are the helper. So they are very empathetic, and they are always willing to help, even maybe if people aren't asking for it. But love is a very big component of who they are. They're always looking for people who are in need. They're very generous. They like to make the world more loving. Something that they get stuck in when they're unhealthy is a sense of pride, maybe because they've sensed that they're always out there helping others, and if they're in an unhealthy place, they can be prideful about that. So the goal for them is to move towards humility. And one of the big things they tend to avoid is their own self, right? They don't practice much self-care, and so they tend to avoid their own needs. But obviously the gift is that they serve people, and so that's a real gift to the people they interact with and the community they interact with. So twos, maybe occupation-wise, would be like doctors, nurses, teachers, social workers. Yeah, you guys know. All right, so twos, yeah, the thing for them, twos, is their need is they need to be needed. That's kind of their thing. Three, the achiever, these are the really impressive people. Effectiveness is, you know, something that's close to them. They're usually team leaders. They're very productive, so they can actually complete tasks, bring projects to completion, things like that. Something they get stuck in when they're in an unhealthy place is usually deceit, because sometimes they're, you know, if they're wanting to get the job done, sometimes at any cost. So the goal for them is to move towards truthfulness. And again, for them, failure is something that they tend to avoid because they hold so much value in their ability to complete things, to bring things to completion. But the gift, again, for these threes to the community, to people around them, is they do make things happen and they obtain results. Threes, I was trying to think. Threes, maybe agents. I think I looked it up, like agents. I don't know. Sport agents, music agents. entertainers, actually, I think was on the list too. Performers. Managers. We get threes. There you go. I know my list is kind of short on that. Sorry. Apologize. Any threes? We've got a few threes. All right.
I'm married to three. Most threes think they can do anything.
There's nothing a three cannot do. Yeah. They're very high functioning people. Yeah. Would you agree with that? Yeah. Yeah, you wish. All right. So then fours. Fours are the individualists. These are the special people. Or they think they're very special. So originality is big for them. Creativity, you know, individual, just, you know, they want to make things extraordinary. They value the inner journey. So for them, when they're in an unhealthy place, they get stuck in envy, kind of seeing what other people might have or be. So a goal for them is to move towards contentment. And, you know, as an individualist, they tend to avoid being ordinary or being normal. So, and Jason's laughing because he's a four. but the gift is this pursuit of passion that they have to offer to the community. So fours, you know, tend to be your artists, your musicians. A lot of the creative aspect of jobs kind of fall into the fours. Any fours here? That's a handful of fours.
Tell us we're special.
You are special. Then we move to fives. But not that special, sure. Fives are the thinkers, or otherwise known as experts in kind of their fields. So wisdom is a big thing for them. They're more about kind of thinking through processes. They're always pursuing more knowledge. They never know enough. They're very reasonable. They're insightful people. So a thing for them when they're in an unhealthy place, stinginess could be a thing because they're about collecting knowledge and collecting wisdom. So the goal for them is to really involve others, to kind of spread that out a bit and participation. They tend to avoid emptiness. But the gift that they have to offer to people or to the community is objectivity. So they're very reasonable people. Fives would be good, you know, your scientists, researchers, librarians. Any fives? Three. So we know who to talk to when we need answers. The sixes are the loyalists. And so loyalty is big for them. There's a need for them to be accepted. That's kind of a big thing for them. But they're, you can depend on them. They're responsible, respectful, they're cautious. So for them, when they're in an unhealthy place, they usually get stuck in fear. They can't move out of something that they're afraid of. So the goal for them is to move towards courage. They tend to avoid deviance. So they're pretty consistent. They're always wanting to kind of stay on what they've always been on. But they have a gift of insight and planning. That's what they have to offer to people and to the community. Sixes, any ideas for occupations? Teacher? Dance teacher? Yeah, teachers are a good one. Any others?
Pastor?
Any sixes in here? Got a few sixes? Okay, so those are the loyalists. The seven is the enthusiast. So they're all about having fun. The party people. Joy's kind of a big aspect for them. Super excitable, super friendly. Happiness is a big driving factor for them. For them, when they get in an unhealthy place, gluttony is kind of where they get stuck. And so their goal is to move towards sobriety. They tend to avoid pain. Pain is not something they engage with. But the gift they have to offer to community is usually innovation and flexibility and a good time. Yeah. Sevens? Anyone sevens? Eights. So eights are the leaders, challenger type. Power is big for them. So they have, they're big advocates. They're leaders. They're really assertive. They're strong. What they tend to get stuck in when they're unhealthy is lust, either for more power. And the goal for them is to move towards innocence. And they tend to avoid weakness. So a big thing for them is to have control. The need for them is to have control. And a gift they have to offer to the community or to individuals is making things happen. So they have the ability to advocate for people when others aren't able to. So, typically you look at eights, they're your CEOs, your presidents, typically people who kind of drive things. Any eights in here? All right. And then nines, usually we save the best for last. So I may be a nine. So the nines are the peacemakers, mediator type. So, they're all about consensus. They kind of build bridges. They're non-judgmental. They like order. The thing for them when they're unhealthy, they get stuck in laziness, because they just can't, they're usually in the middle of things, so they can't move things forward. So for us, it's the goal of moving towards action. And as peacemakers, we tend to avoid conflict. That's a big thing that, we don't engage with. But the gift we have to offer to people and to the community is inclusion. We're willing to kind of build bridges. So counselors are great as nines. I think a lot of our presidents actually in the past have been nines as well. Any nines in here? All right, best one. Okay, so with that being said, there's a video I want to show, and what this lady talks about is kind of in the context of a dinner party. And this might be helpful. So after hearing all these different types, she'll kind of just describe a scenario of, if you're at a dinner party, this is how each type might, present themselves or how they might operate in a dinner party. All right? So listen to this. Oh, these are some resources. It's on your sheet as well, but if you need some more resources, there's some books and websites.
Observation of other people can be very interesting when you study the Enneagram, to be honest. People become endlessly fascinating. And going into a social situation where there's a lot of people around and there's food and drinks, the different types are likely to react quite differently. So if you are a good observer of people, you might pick up on some of these types. The ones likely to walk into the room and almost immediately see what is not been done well or is not perfect enough. You're likely to find the one going around straightening pictures or tidying up the rows of cutlery or reorganising things on the table. The nitpicking quality of the one is what tends to show. Even though the one might not necessarily show it, that's what's going on inside the one as the one observes things in the room. When the two comes into a situation like that, they tend to focus on people and they tend to pick up very quickly on anybody that's not feeling particularly happy or doesn't seem to be fitting in. And they will approach people and encourage them to talk or introduce other people to them so that what they're basically wanting to do is to help people be happier. The three is a type where in a social situation they tend to shine. They are charming, chatty. They can be very impressive, and you're likely to discover quite quickly if you engage with a three many things about them that they want you to know, because they want you to think they're amazing. So they'll probably tell you what they've been doing, where they're going, or what their children have done at school, or the car that they're driving, or the holiday that they're intending, and you're likely to be impressed. Fours generally are fairly reserved in a situation like that. They tend to pull their energy back. You're likely to find a four hoping that you will go and engage them rather than them actively engaging with you. And so you're likely to find them either on their own or on the outskirts of a group, not saying a lot, perhaps looking a little bit ill at ease, because fours very often feel like social misfits, that they don't quite fit, and they want to, but they can't bring themselves to engage easily. Fives are another type that don't engage easily. Now, they don't feel like social misfits, because actually they don't care much either way what you think of them. But they are observers of people and life. And so they're again likely to be on the sidelines rather than fully engaged in what was going on. They watch, they take mental notes, they're very perceptive. They're not going to be particularly keen if you drag them onto the dance floor, because they'd rather watch. Sixes are the sort of people at a big event who are likely to be doing something really helpful. These are not people that look for the limelight. They are likely to be helping with the organisation of the event or carrying dirty plates out. Something helpful, they might be in the kitchen doing the washing up, in fact. They're the sort of people that make sure things are running well without needing thanks or the limelight. Your seven now is very different, because your seven likes the limelight. So your seven likes things to be great and happy and joyous, and they're likely to be the life and soul of the party. They'll be the ones that are dancing on the dance floor and keep going until 3 a.m. And the seven will want you to join in. So the seven is the one who's likely to want to drag you onto the dance floor. Or they'll be surrounded by people and they'll be telling amazing stories or jokes, because they're incredibly entertaining generally. The eight is a big energy person, and very often you are aware of the presence of eights without realising that you are. They are another type that can seem to others to be quite impressive, but almost dominating rather than impressive. They are people who often do want to impress other people by their stories about, which demonstrates their power. So they might tell stories about how they've done somebody down or how they've got the better of somebody. And you get a sense within them that you probably wouldn't want to tackle with this eight. You wouldn't want to come up against the eight, because you can often feel that this eight's going to get the better of you. Nines are unassuming people. generally cheerful, good company. They don't push themselves forward, but should you engage with a nine, you can't help but like them. They tend to be able to talk to anybody, really. They'll fit in anywhere. What you don't realise often about the nine is that they appear to be fully engaging with you, but if they're not 100% enjoying themselves, they might actually have drifted off in their mind elsewhere and only have the appearance of being with you. But you might not notice that at all, and you wouldn't know that unless you were to talk to a nine, in fact. So you can see from that very thumbnail sketch that we have huge differences between the types just in the way they interact at a party.
Was that helpful?
Sorry.
Hannah, you want to join us? All right.
Why don't we do this? Just turn to someone next to you and share with them what you think you are. And if there are some questions that are kind of percolating right now. So I'll give you a couple minutes just to interact. So who's more confused than before they came tonight? Show of hands. Anyone just more confused? Some of us? Yeah. How many of us think we might know our type? Okay, good. So we're going to kind of talk through and share some of our experience in interacting with the Enneagram. And then after that, we're going to do some Q&A. Cool. So why don't we start with this? Could you, any of you can start, just share your first interaction with the Enneagram. And then with that, a story of your type. So, Jason, you want to go first?
Sure. Okay. I want to say, too, we may have said this before, this is just a tool, so no tool represents all of who a person is, so this is just a helpful thing anyway. May not need to say that, but I just wanted to mention it. My first interaction with it was in my mid to late 20s. And
so, 2 years ago?
Pretty much. I started going gray in my teens. No, I'm 40. So I was actually through spiritual direction. I was seeing a spiritual director who was talking to me about it. And then I couldn't figure it out. So I picked up a book and I was kind of reading through the types. But then when I got to the four, I started to get really uncomfortable and embarrassed. I was like, that's a terrible type. Who would want to be that type? Sure enough, that's one of the ways you can type yourself, apparently. So, and then from that, what's been helpful about it is how Waylon talked about the lines on it. It's helped me kind of understand some of my story growing up, like my ways of kind of surviving, and then ways I still kind of carry that into adulthood. So I can talk about that more later.
Yeah, but it's something that really is slow cooked. Yeah. Like, I really encourage people, if you're new to this, like, just let it sink in and simmer, because probably your first experience of it versus now 15 years later is probably so much deeper, but it really takes that time, right? Mm-hmm. And for the record, when I read four, I was like, oh, I want to be a four. I'm not a four.
Yeah, only non-fours want to be fours.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, Bob Dylan's a four. I want to be a four.
Yeah, those fours don't like me. Anyway, that's not true. I don't know.
Yeah, so probably my experience with it was through my mother. She's a five, so she's always investigating things. And I am an occupational therapist, so I work at a hospital. And so I've been working about 3 years and kind of coming to a point that I was, like, really, really exhausted and really burnt out and kind of working really long hours. And my mom kind of first mentioned, like, you know, have you ever heard of something called compassion fatigue? And just kind of talking to her more, and she kind of introduced the idea of, like, the Enneagram and thinking about what I might be, and I'm a two, I'm a helper. And so just kind of finding myself, like, just forever, like, helping people and doing things, especially with my job, and just finding myself, like, being really, really burnt out and having no energy whatsoever. And then also finding myself being really resentful to the people that I was helping, and then all of a sudden, like, lashing out and, like, yelling at them, and then wondering where that was coming from and not really getting, like, what. And then, yeah, so that's kind of was my introduction. And I think also, like, being in the church and being a female in the church, being a two is really celebrated. And so, like, how you can help people and kind of – so that I think is just also was, like, reinforced. And so if I was helpful to people, then I would gain their love and vice versa. And so, like, I think just, like, reinforce that pattern of, like, wanting to do things for people and wanting to help and then feeling loved that way.
And it probably attracted you to this crazy little new church that was starting, but also was contributing to your burnout at the same time, because we didn't know what we were doing and just, like, ah, everybody go, right? Yeah. All right, thanks.
I can't remember exactly when I first – I had heard kind of just randomly through the years, but – not until maybe 3-4 years back in seminary, I went through a class where they kind of talked a lot more in detail about this. So that was kind of my first chance and opportunity to really kind of dive a little deeper into that. So for me as a nine, you know, as a peacemaker, my wife, Rachel, she'll get super frustrated when, you know, she'll share with me about maybe someone who's been real difficult or maybe even hurtful to her. And instead of me being empathetic, I didn't realize this until I kind of understood this, but my immediate go-to was always to kind of like try to explain the other person. I'd be like, well, maybe he was just, you know, and it would just frustrate her to no end. But I think that was kind of my nine coming out because of my ability or my desire to feel like, you know, we don't need to be antagonists here, you know, just trying to bring the world together. But so that was kind of, as we were discovering some of this, a lot of that started making more sense as far as why I would react a certain way or why how I would respond when it came to interpersonal interactions.
Jason, do you have a specific four story? If you don't.
Yeah, no, I think, I alluded to it. So I think growing up in my... So one of the things like fours can do is really tune in individually to people as they uniquely are. So they actually like make good counselors, things like that. So one of the ways I survived was by being kind of invisible. So I would be really helpful and intuit. So fours, I'm going to get ahead a little bit. So close your ears if this isn't helpful. But they disintegrate to the unhealthy two, the helper. So I would become really helpful. And I kind of like got through my growing up household years that way. But I kind of came out of that not really having a sense of self, if that makes sense. So, that's also like each type tends to have a primary wound. So one of mine has been being unseen or invisible. That's why fours are sometimes weird, just for weirdness sake. But that's another story. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think mine was, through the larger community that we're part of, Covenant, and then we also had a NAV retreat where Jason and Jenna hosted it, and we all went through. And then I spent a weekend with a Franciscan friar named Richard Rohr, and we went through the Enneagram for a day, and he asked me what type I was, and I go, I think I'm a seven. And so this is like, he's one of the guys who brought the Enneagram stateside. Like, he's a Enneagram Jedi. So he goes, what do you think you are? I was like, I think I'm a seven. He goes, And then I started texting Jason. I was like, Roar doesn't think I'm a seven. Who am I?
Yeah, I got like a text every 20 minutes. Like, because then I guess y'all were going through the types, and then you're like looking up sixes now fives. I'm like, I don't know, man. I guess. You had about like a 4-hour crisis of identity.
I have a theory on that.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it today. I'll tell it later. But a story that comes to mind, probably the biggest mistake that I made leading Vox was because I'm a seven. And so we had a pretty difficult staff situation. It was someone I knew. I brought him down, hired him. 3 months in, it was clear that it wasn't a good fit. Clear to everybody. All of my mentors were like, you got to let him go. Being a seven, I'm an optimist. I have new ideas. So everyone was around. I was like, this guy's not working. I was like, let's do it again. If we just try harder, come on, let's go. And almost to the detriment of our community, I almost took the community down. And then I almost burned myself out. And so I learned about the Enneagram in after that. So looking back in hindsight, I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. So maybe the next question then is, in terms of a spiritual formation tool, like why is it helpful in being formed into, you know, who God intended us to be? And then maybe along those lines, how is it different than like Myers-Briggs or some of the other personality types?
Sure, I'll go. I think for me, kind of what's been really helpful is kind of learning more about myself and what drives me, and then kind of having that as like a point of checking in. And I think in kind of one of the lessons that I learned in trying to be continuously helpful is that like I wasn't very good at setting boundaries, and I just would keep giving and giving and giving until I was burnt out. And so I think in this process, through some lessons I've learned, is how to like better draw boundaries and how that's been really helpful. And then in that boundary drawing, sometimes it can still feel really scary because if they're not responding the way I want, then it can be at like the question is like, am I still like lovable? Is this person still going to love me by drawing this boundary? And so I think in that, like having to kind of keep practicing, like, you know, I don't have to be anything or do anything. Like I am just loved for who I am. And so I think just kind of continuously having to remind myself, especially when it's a more, you know, vulnerable relationship, or if I'm drawing that boundary for the first time, it's something I have to keep practicing at and, you know, practicing drawing those boundaries and knowing like where my limit is and then kind of reminding myself of that.
And Hannah's on our NAV team, and just, I guess, walking alongside her the last couple of years, I've really seen you grow in this area. And it's, you know, it's been really neat to watch because I'm surrounded by twos. My mom's a two, sister's a two. So it's great.
Yeah, I think to kind of answer that question, I know with our midweek groups, we were going through that last fall, I think. And that was one of the primary questions that came back as the groups were going through it was, I mean, it was neat to be able to kind of talk through these different types and try to identify where you were. But as far as spiritual formation, how did that translate? Or, you know, where's the value for the Enneagram? And I think, you know, maybe the helpful sort of framework or even context to really establish that idea. You know, it's just, you know, we've talked about, you know, when Jesus talks about the greatest commandment, you know, is loving God, but just as equal as loving people. So those essentially are one and the same. And so if you want to know how you're doing when it comes to loving God, typically what we think of as spiritual formation, like how do we know how well we're doing with loving God? Take a look at how you're loving people, right? And that's kind of the indicator. And so I think with the Enneagram, that's I think why the tool is so helpful for us to be able to understand how we can actually love people better in our own type, and then also understanding other people and what type they are, being able to kind of have a healthy expression of our type and being able to love others. And I think that's what translates, in my mind, that's what translates to our own spiritual formation and being able to love people. And then that kind of in turn impacts our ability to love God as well.
Yeah, I think of it, and a lot of the work I do in spiritual direction is around cultivating discernment. So I think in the first kind of half of life, spirituality, a lot of times our faith journey is about being in communities where truth is always something that comes externally a lot of times. People kind of give us direction and guidance. Like when your kid's three or four, you don't go up to a busy intersection and say, you know, just follow your heart, honey, you know. But, you know, when you're like 15 and 16, if you're still holding your kid's hand and they don't need that, then you're probably doing violence to their journey. So at some point, I really do think of it that way, that at some point we really want to empower people to be able to discern the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, and to be able to discern their own, you know, our own stuff, and to be able to tell the difference. So tools like this are really important in terms of just knowing what's trustworthy in myself and what's not, you know, and we're all a mixed bag, you know, if we're honest. So that, I think, is really valuable, just kind of empowering that discernment process. So, yeah.
When I think through this, I told the staff this metaphor at lunch on Tuesday. So I have a neighbor, and they have these two really cute little dogs, King and Princess. And Princess just escapes all the time. She's just wandering the neighborhood. So if you look at our neighbor's fence, it's a chain link fence. And then there's like plastic lids and pieces of wood and like tires and like whatever they can do to like mend the fence to keep Princess from escaping. Like it's just growing. The fence is getting bigger and bigger, but it's not working. And I remember just seeing that and I'm like, that's kind of how churches do spiritual formation. At the core of growing into who we're supposed to be is being fully loved and being able to receive that love. And when we're loved, a lot of those addictions, those a lot of the behavior, which comes from a lack of intimacy and connection, those things find healing. But instead of actually getting to the core of it, we just like put up bricks and walls and planks just to try to block it off. And it doesn't work because we don't feel loved. And the Enneagram is just a tool. But I really think it's the most formative tool that I've come across in terms of understanding how do I even receive love? And then how do I love others? And then when I'm loved, what are some things that I, like, how does my behavior change? When I'm not feeling loved, I'm not feeling safe, what are some things that I do? And it's been a really helpful tool for me. Relationally, so you guys can pick whether your family of origin or your parents, I guess that's family of origin, or children or your partner. How's the Enneagram helped you? I guess Wei already shared one. But.
I'll add a little more to that. So even in our marriage, one thing I know, and it wasn't, you know, prior to being familiar with Enneagram, like I was never really, not that I wasn't good at conflict, but I tended to avoid it, or I would shy away from it. And so there'd be times where, you know, she would be frustrated with something, but I would just be like, no, everything's cool. Everything's, you know, there's nothing wrong. And I think just that me always wanting to create a space where there wasn't conflict wasn't helpful. And I think that was a big piece of our learning too. And I think once we kind of understood that was it helped me be more intentional to actually engage, you know, when there was a need to engage conflict, or I would just start something for the sake of starting something, maybe. But yeah, it was kind of that piece of learning was important, just relationally in our marriage. So
I think for me, I think especially with people who I don't necessarily get along with. So people who are more gut types, like I get nervous around, and I think it was just more like helpful for me to start understanding just like I'm also kind of conflict avoidant, but people who are more aggressive or I just would kind of get really nervous and kind of shy away from. And I'm still kind of still learning about this, but trying to like lean into that or try to understand like what I might perceive as aggressive just as like their personality, and they're not meaning anything by it. So I think it's giving me more empathy toward like the way people are coming from and what they're kind of needing kind of in that interaction. So I think it's something I'm still kind of working on, but I think in the workplace or just like people I don't necessarily would jive with as easily, I think it's giving me some understanding a little bit better.
I think it's kind of made me realize why I'm difficult to live with. we actually heard a podcast recently. It's pretty good. Where he's like an author, and he asks like people who are about to get married, "Do you think you're easy to live with?" And if they say, "Yeah, I'm pretty easy," he says, massive alarm bells go off in my head. So I'm not easy to live with. So I think
we're... It only took you 19 years of marriage to figure that out.
Yeah. It's been interesting. So like Jenna's a three. So she wants me to ask her, hey, what are your goals today? What do you want to accomplish? You know, because I figured that out because she was always be so interested in my goals, and a lot of times I didn't have any. And then confused. And then really excited when things would go well. But then I'm asking, but am I really known? Because I'll even sabotage something in order to be known. So success isn't like the highest value. But she loves it when I, like, the beginning of the day, I'm like, hey, you got this. Like, she wants me to be like a cheerleader. And I'm like, I don't even know how to do that. So that's kind of some of the interaction. Yeah. It's fun.
So if you kind of sit with the Enneagram, it really, the complexity of it. So the complexity of it makes it difficult to kind of enter in. But if you're willing to really engage it, like once you start looking at integration and disintegration. So I'm going to tell a story to try to give it a shot. So I was speaking in Houston the last two weekends. So I spoke four times each weekend. And I was just exhausted. So I'm learning. So I'm a seven. Sevens disintegrate into the unhealthy one, which everything becomes really black and white. And I become really opinionated about everything. So I was noticing, I was like, huh, I have a lot of opinions right now. To me, then, I'm like, oh, okay, I need to take care of myself. Like, I'm low on resources. But then for my wife, she's actually a four. She integrates into the healthy one. So when my wife is doing well, she actually has lots of opinions. So it's good for me to have less opinions and for her to have more opinions. Should we go Jungian? No? All right. I'll just leave it at that. Okay.
It's good stopping point.
Good stopping point. Yeah. So I think sometimes the way Enneagram's spoken of feels kind of negative. Do you guys have any thoughts on that and maybe some boundaries that would be good as we're entering in as a community?
Yeah, Wade brought up this question actually as we were preparing. You know, there, and I was actually handing out the thing, and I think I met someone, Travis, and I was like, oh, you're probably this. But, you know, one of the rules is I shouldn't do that. So you're not supposed to, like, type other people, although you're probably going to want to use that to help understand other people. But I would just say to really hold that, any awareness tool, to hold it lightly. It does help me to, like, understand, like, even when I was getting to know Waylon back in the day. I don't know if you even like this story. I love it. So
yes, you can tell it.
Okay, cool.
He's trying to make peace. Yeah. It's fine. No, it's conflict. Good. Just tell
good.
It.
I was kind of going to tell it, but it's good to have permission. I think you process internally. But I also sometimes, you know, when you're kind of the new person around, you're kind of insecure and maybe you talk too much. And so when he was quiet and he was thinking and processing, I thought, oh, is he judging me? Is he judging me? And I like no Enneagram. I was like, maybe he's a one. Maybe he's judging me. And then after a while, like he did the Enneagram, he's like a nine. I said, oh, you're a nine. Oh, I'm so relieved. Now, I love ones. So it's not just like a one thing. But I knew, like, oh, he's trying to make harmony out of this ridiculous situation all the time, myself. So it was such a comfort, though. Like, I was able to just kind of relax and, you know.
Yeah, and what you don't know, when you're talking, I'm mentally checking out. Like the lady was saying, that's my secret.
And that's okay, too. Like, anything other than forming opinions about me.
But you thought he was angry with you.
Yeah,
he didn't like you. Yeah.
He might be angry with me. I don't know. But it was helpful, though.
Yeah, I think when we were asking that question, I think it's, you know, anytime you do something where you're, you know, typecasting somebody or you're kind of putting someone in a box, it can communicate in violent ways. And so I think we're just trying to be mindful of that And even when we talk about some of these types, you know, there's, you know, all of them have their growth edges, but those are always the things that we tend to cringe at, or we maybe feel hurt when those things are pointed out about us. And so we're trying to balance that. And I know my initial thought, especially as a nine, is, you know, we don't want people to feel bad, or we don't want to hurt people. Cause that can be easily done as we talk through this, or, you know, as Jason was saying, as you maybe preconceive, you know, what someone is. But then you're also saying, I know you brought up a good point too, of, you know, what you heard from Roar, in the sense that sometimes you do need to hear some of those uncomfortable things about yourself in order for, you know, a self-awareness to really take root, but then to actually really begin to start the healing process. So I think there's just a lot of balancing that we have to do within that.
Yeah. Or what I would add to that is, you probably just want to do the work yourself, but if there's people that you're safe with and you've earned that right to have that conversation. And so there's some discernment there, but I actually think there's something to the negative part of it that's really important. There's a podcast that I just listened to called Road to Yourself. It's on the Enneagram, and they interviewed Nadia Boltz-Weber, who's one of my favorite pastors. And she's an eight, and I have a hard time understanding eights, and it was brilliant. But in the podcast, what they were talking about was how people who are going through recovery, so if people have gone through addiction and they're in recovery, they're actually a lot more receptive to the Enneagram. They're asking why. And what they said was, your level of health and wholeness begins where you acknowledge your ego ends. So if you're in addiction, then that's kind of pounded into the ground. And so you're at the bottom. And so this tool is really helpful. And I think why this negative side could be helpful in churches, we just have different language for another ego structure. So we haven't removed it. We've just found moral things for people to do. So we actually haven't found life together as a community. And I think some of the negative aspects is really important, is we're all saying, hey, we all have our who we are and then our shadow, and then we want to grow into ourselves together, but it really takes acknowledging that ego, and the ego is just doesn't want to let go. So you either have to exhaust it or have to embarrass it somehow. Or in some way.
Can I say that same thing another way too? Sure. So I think like one of the ways we think about discipleship and formation is that you become pure. Like you adapt these certain behaviors and you avoid these other ones. But your person, so the ego, though, just adapts. It doesn't die, and it just puts on religious clothes. Does that make sense? So you can look really spiritual and be a total jerk. You know what I mean? So it's just kind of acknowledging, like, when we're just relating at a behavioral level, you don't necessarily have to grow as a human being and mature. Does that make sense? So one of the values of a tool like this is it's kind of calling out our BS a little bit on us, but hopefully in a gentle way is our hope. I don't know if that helps, but yeah.
Anyone have anything to add? Okay. So any questions? Mm-hmm. Josh? Yeah, that's a great question. Did everyone hear the question? Yeah, and that's a really common question too. So I'll let the.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, one, maybe everyone wants to hang out and talk Enneagram. but also, I would say reading one of the books is helpful too. Sometimes it's better to self-type. Sometimes the inventory stuff isn't really helpful. The other piece is too, like, we all enter into that journey of self-awareness at different places too. So sometimes if we've been at a place where we're just functioning all the time and we haven't really, like, life hasn't made us stop and reflect, we may not really be aware of a lot of this. Like, you might read a sheet like this and hear all those characteristics and be like, yeah, I'm kind of all those things. Yeah, well, you're kind of more a few of them than others probably. But that's just you know, part of that journey. So I would also just be patient with that work and know, like, this may not be a tool that's super helpful for everybody right now. But yeah, so individual conversations with people who know you is another thought. But what do you guys think? Sorry, I hit a bunch of them.
Yeah, so if you're high on two types, do one of you want to address maybe kind of the heart, the head, and the gut? Sometimes that's a helpful way.
So, I mean, I'll jump in. But go ahead.
No, I'm trying to remember which type.
So some of the ways you can kind of interact with it, too, is like the head types or the 5, 6, and 7. So anxiety tends to be there a little bit more. So you can kind of pay attention to what's like a primary emotion you work through. But it's tricky because it's hard to, like, anxiety isn't something we're aware of all the time. Or, you know, for the gut types, it's anger. 2, 3, and 4 is the heart, which is shame. You know, and then in each of those types have trouble determining what that feeling is. So, like, 9s actually tend to have trouble recognizing their anger. And 2s don't necessarily keep track of themselves. So it's, you know, so it's kind of hard to dial in, but that's another way you can be curious. But you could also just ask, you know, people who are kind of doing this too, and just say, hey, what do you think a little bit? And if you get into the integration, the disintegration, so if you look at, like, what does it look like when you're feeling, you know, loved or grounded, your life kind of moves in a certain way. Sometimes you'll identify more with that, or maybe even the first part of our life, I think we actually tend to spin, most of us tend to spin it more disintegrated. So looking for, you know, kind of where, you know, like Gideon said, do I hang out and have a lot of opinions of people all the time? Which is a nice way of talking about judging, probably.
But I actually, so I can circle back to the roar. So I'm a 7. I didn't know I had anxiety because my anxiety just made me have more fun. So it just looked like I was having a ton of fun. But I was just trying to avoid my anxiety. So my theory with roar, so I moved around my whole life, and I've always been a minority. So I was always new, and I was an outsider. And I wasn't, you know, particularly good-looking or athletic or academic, so I didn't have many tools. So I realized when I enter into an environment that doesn't feel safe, the mask I wear is to be cool. But I'm not a 4. 4s usually pull off cool better than I do, but my cool kind of comes out like a 1. So I think what happened was when I'm with other pastors, it doesn't feel safe to me. And I was in a room of pastors. So my energy was like super like. So I think he was sensing that energy. And so that's my theory, but I think that's how I've entered environments that I don't feel safe. And so, yeah. But the anxiety in the head and the heart and the gut really helps me. So I think that's a good question to ask.
And that's why we don't type or type each other, you know. Even Roar gets it wrong, right? So,
yeah. Yeah.
Like, if you look at the circle, mm-hmm. is there a relation between 1, 4, 2, 8, 5, 7, and it goes back to 1? So what's the difference?
Yeah, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. I'll let you take it.
So each type, when you feel, you know, we talk about being integrated, feeling healthier, walking in the spirit, you'll move toward a certain number, the healthy version of a certain number. So a 4 moves toward a healthy 1, which is the reformer. So when a 4 starts to have a sense of justice, it's usually pretty trustworthy. But then when the 4 is not integrated, not safe, and striving to be loved, a lot of times they'll be really helpful, and nobody will be asking them to do that stuff, but they'll do it and expect to be appreciated for it, and then they'll get really upset. Does that make sense? So each type has an integration and a disintegration point.
So you are a 4.
Yeah.
You can never be a peacemaker.
You can. Well, you can. I mean, you can. There's some theories too. So you're kind of getting into the depths of it. Like some people say, like Christ kind of moved toward all the integrated types, and that as we kind of journey and walk in the Spirit, like we actually can. Like I have a lot of nine qualities. I've had some people like type me that way even before. So now we're getting into other stuff. Like, so my mom was a nine, so I have some of the strengths of her, like some of those gifts she gave me, and my dad was an eight, so I've got a little bit of eight in me. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it can get pretty complex pretty quick, but I hope I'm not freaking anybody out. So, yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about wings and what they are and how you know what yours is?
That's a good question. So, is anyone getting more confused as we talk about this? Yeah. Could you maybe talk to one of us afterwards about wings? Because it's just like another level of complexity. Yeah, yeah. But if we're going to have a retreat in the fall, and then we're going to do wings, we're going to do integration, disintegration, and we're just trying to get everyone familiar with the language. Mm-hmm. Did you have anything to say? Yeah. Is that okay, Naomi? It's a good question, though. Yeah, over here. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for sharing that.
I think for me, it's like in a lot of it that I've had to kind of come to is like asking the question, like, why am I doing this? And is it like inevitably to do this because I'm wanting to get someone's like love, or I want like, or is it kind of out of that like idea, like, I don't really know what my place is, so I'm going to help. And like, this is, you know, kind of like trying to figure out like how I can fit in and kind of do it. So I think a lot of it, I kind of come back to like, well, what's my motivation in doing this? And sometimes it's like, you know, and sometimes it's kind of benign, but then sometimes it's more like, you know, if I'm noticing a pattern, or if I'm noticing that I'm getting tired, or just noticing different things, that's kind of like what I, you know, try to pay attention to.
I think there was a hand in the back. Yeah.
But I've in faith, like in my faith journey, like That's a good question.
I mean, my sense is they're, you know, our souls are made uniquely. So this is a very poor answer. I'll just say that. So I also think, though, like who we are, like the image of God in us is much deeper than personality, if that makes sense. So some of this is just shorthand, like how do we be a part of God's beauty and kingdom and creation here? But I do think we tend to, you know, and I think maybe being a parent too, like it kind of answers for me some of these questions around nature, nurture kind of thing. Like there's some ways in which the personalities of my kiddos, you know, as much as I've tried to change them, are unchangeable. not that I'm, you know, not putting away money for their counseling later, but it's true, kids. So that would be my thought, is that there's actually, you know, that's probably a good part of how God made you, and that's part of your gift. And actually, I feel like the church in some ways owes an apology to AIDS. Like, I don't think we've done a good job of celebrating your gift and really honoring that strength and that call to action. So a lot of AIDS I've really enjoyed connecting with, but I've always also felt like we haven't done a good job of being inclusive in the church. So for whatever that's worth.
And you should give that podcast to listen to, because Nadia is an eight and she does two episodes on it. It's really good.
I think for me too, like being a female, a two, being raised in the church, I'm a pastor's kid, I'm a missionary kid. Like it's like just like this very entrenched idea of like needing to help people, and that like just like very much like part of how I've been grown up and part of my this like just the culture. I think for me, in the last few years, it's been really, really helpful and healthy for me to see myself. Like, that's not my only identity, and I don't have to do that in order to, like, earn God's favor and to, like, know. And then I think especially as a woman, like, in a church, I think for a long time I felt like that was, like, the only voice or the only way I could have a voice in a church is by helping or by doing. And so I think especially in the last few years, I think I've learned better how to, like, I like who I am, and I like the quality like of being like a two. But I think I've learned better about like when I'm serving that way out of a need to, you know, do something versus like this is who I am and this is how God has created me to be, and then using those gifts in a way that's helpful and healthy for me and those around me.
And I would say you've helped our team say no to some things and to draw some boundaries. That's been really helpful, I think, because you've been doing that work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was wondering if any of you felt like you operated as maybe a different type when you're dealing with your family or your social life versus your work life.
Yes, thank you.
That's a great question.
A deep question.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah. As I was listening to it, I felt like I was typing as one, and I was like, I think I'm a two. I definitely don't think I'm a one. He's like, oh, that's funny. I don't see how you can mark off one, because like I don't think that you get angry at home very often, but you talk about being angry at work a lot. Mm. I'm not as much of a helper, server, take care of people at work as I am when I'm at home with my husband and son.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. My father's an eight, and so his eightness, I think both positive and the shadow side, came out in his work a lot. But at home, the eight didn't come out very much at all. So that's I've never really thought about it like that.
So for the nine, the integration is to a healthy three. So when you start to become more active and get stuff done, like you're kind of integrating and moving. Like when nines kind of get caught trying to harmonize the whole world, they get kind of stuck and inward, and then can get caught in kind of like lingering in kind of unhealthy loyalties at times too.
Stubbornness.
Yeah.
That's where I disintegrate. Yeah. Where I get stuck on just being stubborn with what I, instead of trying to be a peacemaker.
Rachel, yeah. Do you want to comment?
And I would say, like, the main goal is for us to see us as God sees us, which is just utter compassion and love. And I think it's really hard for us to be compassionate with ourselves. And I think that's the starting place. And then when we start there, then it enables us to see others with compassion and love. And so some of these things, I think we can name them, but just not to take ourselves too seriously, offer ourselves a lot of grace. And then there's just seasons of life where you can throw like a lot of it out the window. Like if you have a newborn baby or if you're in some sort of like crisis, then, you know, integrating into a three, you're just trying to survive. And that's great. Right.
Yeah. I think any awareness tool, just knowing what health looks like can be oppressive sometimes. So it's like we kind of talk about awareness on a spectrum. So you've got like self-ignorance, awareness in the middle, and then self-consciousness or self-abdication. So,
or I've heard self-knowledge.
Yeah.
And then self-awareness.
Yeah, yeah.
So knowledge is just the information, but right. You haven't used it yet. Right? Sorry, Andrew.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so just knowing like we can flog ourselves with it, or we can use it to notice something. Like I may be making a big decision. Okay, well, what are my trustworthy instincts in this moment? And, you know, those sounding boards that we know can help us with that too. But.
So your question is in terms of using the tool more actively than, say, Myers-Briggs or a personality type. How can you – what questions can we be asking about motivation, right?
Maybe on a more day-to-day basis, you can sit in class, mm-hmm. But you don't know your motivation while you're going to test your
I mean, I ask – you know, I think part of our journey is starting to become sensitive to what grace feels like. So it has a texture, so I think part of our journey is to develop a palette for grace. And so I think as we kind of become aware of that, like in the way we treat ourselves, the way we interact, it can kind of also help us know like what our better instincts are. That makes sense. So there's some mornings I wake up and I'm like, I probably shouldn't talk to anybody today. You know what I mean? Like, and you just go through your day and you just try to make it like the best you can and not do a lot of damage. But anyway, I don't know what y'all think.
I've heard that when you're embarrassed or when your ego is kind of bumped a little bit, however you're responding to that, like notice that. And so I think some people say try to get embarrassed once a day to kind of gauge the health of where you're at. Right? It's pretty helpful.
Yeah. And there may be a primary emotion, like you avoid at all costs. So like, if you don't mind my talk. Yeah. So like one thing, Gideon, you share is like your sadness looks like fun, you know? So like each time, and so I
super confusing, by the way.
Yeah. And I thought that was really insightful. So, and like for fours, it's jealousy and can be like regret, you know, so there's certain emotions we just have, like we avoid at all costs. And so some of this journey is like a journey about making space to actually feel things like regret, like grief, like sadness. And when we're not running from those parts of ourselves, I feel like what it occurs to us to do is much more trustworthy. Does that make sense? So also actively engaging kind of the parts of our journey and work that we typically avoid at all costs. That makes sense.
And it's okay for it to be awkward and for it to feel infantile. Like, I'm kind of at that stage right now. Because when I shared this with the staff. So I'm a 7. I'm an optimist. And then to add to that, I came from like a hyper-optimistic family. So the glass was always full. So sadness wasn't really permitted. And then being a 7, so I didn't know how to be sad. So I'm actually learning to sit with negativity more. But when I disintegrate into the shadow side of the 1, which is kind of like real, like I kind of like, I'm like a dick. Like, everything's just really black and white. And then, like, that negativity's not good. But I'm learning to tell the difference right now, if that makes sense. So some of it is just like, just asking good questions, I think. Yeah. What are some of the questions you all are asking with your types right now, I guess, in your own journey? That might be. Would that help? Yeah.
I think a story that kind of keeps coming back to my mind when I just first started on the journey was one of my really good friends was in a relationship that wasn't healthy. But I kept playing the role of, like, whenever things weren't going well, I would kind of be there to kind of help her. And that's what felt like the right and the good and the Christian thing to do. But then I kept feeling like, well, what if I need something? When is she going to be here for me? And, like, so that's kind of the question that I kept asking of myself and feeling that way. And it was a cycle that kept happening over and over and over and over again until I kind of got to a point that I was like, wait, like, I'm tired of this cycle happening. I'm tired of the way I'm feeling. So then it just started me asking other people, like, this is what keeps happening. Why does this keep happening? And then I kind of realized that, like, I was continuing to help her and enable her in the same way she was enabling that, you know, the other person. And so it just started kind of at that curiosity. And I just kept noticing the pattern of me feeling resentful and, like, me wanting to help. But then when the tables were turned and like, if I needed something that wasn't happening, like, it wasn't being reciprocated. So I think, so just kind of paying attention to when I start feeling like what are my intentions, and am I starting to feel kind of resentful, or am I starting to feel tired, or like in this helping, like, is it because I'm trying to get something back in return from it? So that's kind of like for me where the motivation started. And then just a lot of it in the beginning was just asking other, like talking to some other people that knew me well and kind of getting their gauge on what was going on.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, being a 9, the one thing that I'll tend to struggle with is being lazy, or the, you know, sloth is kind of the thing for 9s, because, you know, rather than making a decision or just being open to all decisions, we end up not making any. And I think for me, it's something that I have to.
And it's tricky because he's one of the hardest working people, so his sloth comes out in really, like, it's not an active work sloth. It's actually decision-making sloth. Is it? Okay. Because you would think, because he's one of the hardest working guys I know.
Well, that's so, that piece of it, when I integrate into a 3, which is
so
achiever.
You're just super healthy.
So I'm just super healthy, apparently. All right.
Super high capacity, and he just, like, his, like, sloth game is better than our A game.
Probably, I think so. Yeah. That's probably
We're bringing you down, man. Yeah, you need to work on that.
Yeah. You good find insight. Some threes
that's,
to hang out
that's
with.
Good insight. So where I was trying to head, I can't remember where I'm trying to head now. So I think the question I'm trying to ask myself is whether I'm taking the easy way out by not, like, either having an opinion or making an opinion, because I'm just saying, well, I'm a peacemaker. I won't, you know, I don't want to ruffle anything. So that's kind of my lazy way out. And so maybe the question I have to keep asking myself is, am I just relying on that? Or do I actually need to be more proactive about, you know, not necessarily being confrontational, but actually engaging that piece to actually have more opinion, you know, so.
I think my growth edge, and I think each type it is different. But the four part that plays into my story is, I like if someone asks me to be a part of like a board or to do something, I feel really flattered and seen and noticed, and I'll a lot of times say yes. And I have trouble like letting other people into my decision making process. So I've started a practice, like hitting up a couple people. And just acknowledging, like, I actually can't see. It's, like, outside of my field of vision when I'm being compulsive. Like, when I'm just, yeah, I'll help out with that. You like me, you know, or something like that. So I'm starting to kind of practice, like, not committing to things and actually, like, trust a couple of voices in my life. Like, they who do actually know me, because that's the other thing Fours will say. Nobody really knows me. You know, how could they help me with this decision? So,
I recently asked these two guys. So I can disintegrate into one, which is a gut, but I have an eight wing. I know I'm not supposed to bring up the wing. But I've been around relatively unhealthy eights, so I don't really know what healthy eight looks like, and that wing scares me. So there's times where, you know, I should probably lead and just step in, but I don't want to bulldoze. And so I've asked them just to help me notice, like, what's the difference between when I'm in my gut, when I'm in the one, like, the shadow side, but when I'm actually, like, you know, using my wing. So, so maybe we can do one more question if there is, and then I think we're going to have the dessert preparers share, so. One more question.
I took some of the inventories last night, and I'm very critical of myself. And so when I come to, like, some choices to choose from, I think to myself, well, what would somebody else think about me? And then I always choose the most negative option available. And so I guess my question is, like, do the inventories account for that? Or is that, like, I need to figure out what I actually think about myself?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
I mean, I would say that's what's hard. Like, sometimes the inventory process isn't as helpful as doing more of the reading process. So I would say actually for a large percentage of people, the inventory stuff's going to be more confusing than just kind of getting into reading a little bit more about the types. But and then some of these things really might require, like, a conversation. So that's, I'm sincere. I enjoy having coffee or tea. So if you want to.
And you should really take him up on that. So I've heard there's really two ways to fully know. Most people, you have to hit the bottom, which we don't choose to do. And then throughout history, communities have had wise people. And the wise people can speak into that. But the Protestant tradition really doesn't have that. And so I think we've got one.
Talk to Waylon and Hannah and Gideon. Yeah. And but then
they also say when you read it, I think, did someone already say this? Whichever one you dislike the most, whichever one you are most embarrassed of, that's probably you. Like, I read the seven, and it's like, it's super embarrassing. Like, chase shiny object. Like a puppy. I'm like a puppy dog. I'm like,
you're like a moth.
Oh, yeah, I'm like a moth. I chase the light. I'm like, ah. So I'll let you take over for the dessert.
Yeah, yeah. So if you actually made a dessert and tried to have that relate to your type, and maybe nobody did, and that's totally fine, would you like to share what you made and how that connects with your type? Yeah.
I'm a 9. So I made cookies that I was trying to make that almost everybody could eat.
Oh.
So they're, like, gluten-free, dairy-free. I couldn't find one, a recipe I liked that didn't have an egg in it. I don't like chocolate, and I know most people do, so that's usually all that there is. There's usually not something for people who don't like chocolate. So I put lemon on it.
That's very good.
Like, get in for everybody.
Yeah. Can everyone hear? Yeah.
Do you want to? Yeah. Is that like every decision a 9 makes, pretty much? No. Sometimes. Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah. I'm a 9, and I really enjoyed your lemon. Yes. I brought chocolate chip cookies because I figure everybody likes chocolate chip cookies. Yeah. So, same thought
I made chocolate chip cookies, but I changed the recipe on the bag. But it's kind of hidden. It's very subtle, and there's more sugar in it. A lot of times four is like a lot of sugar. Not all fours, but some. Anybody else? Oh, that's good. That's good. Caramel is loyal to your teeth for a while. Yeah, Andrew.
Yeah, I'm a six, and I brought no-bake cookies that are my mom's recipe. So as a kid, it was like the first thing I learned how to make that wasn't like box macaroni and cheese. But it's something that, like, for a six, having like the network, the safety net around you, the people that are your security, your comfort, that's really important. So having something that's connected to like where I come from kind of went into making that dessert. And actually had to call my mom partner to do it this time. But, like, how much milk do I put in? And so sixes are always checking back in with their people to make sure they're making the right decision.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great. A little bit of home. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Was it new? Was it new? You hadn't tried it yet? Yeah, yeah. Let's do it.
That's awesome. Yeah, seven's like new things. That's good. Thank
you. I'm a four and I made plum upside down cake.
Oh. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah, yeah. Just own it. Yeah, Emily. For you. She made the dessert for you while you connected deeply with her. I love it. And what about the other one, Emily? What's the other dessert?
Peanut butter cookies, gluten-free. So, everyone feel like they're being healthy.
Yeah.
And then the other one was the chocolate-covered strawberries, also pretty healthy.
Nice.
But also my one wing took over, so they had to look perfect. We ate the imperfect one. Yeah.
This is awesome. Anybody else? Yeah.
I didn't think this was making this up, but yeah. I'm a seven, and I brought some chocolate chip cookies that were like breaking a thing, and I just put salt on them, sea salt, and I moved. Oh, thank you. And I'm going to just like pull something out and say that when I'm unhealthy, like a chocolate chip cookie, I also become salty.
That's good. That's good. You relate to that, kid? Yeah. That's good. You relate to that?
I've never tried it. Seems new. I'll try it. It seems fun.
Being salty?
Being salty?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah.
So I'm going to say this for Sarah because she only said it for herself because she's a two.
Oh, yeah.
And Hudson and I didn't bring desserts, but she's a two, so she got extras of desserts.
Good. Do y'all feel appreciation for her? Twos really like to be appreciated without having to ask you for the appreciation. So be sure you thank her. But she might not want verbal thanks, so just figure out what makes her feel appreciated. Awesome. Anybody else?
Thank you.
That's awesome. That's great. So you made your dessert while you were driving. That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. So you made a dessert.
Sweating profusely.
Yeah. You sacrificed for us. Thank you. Anybody else? Yeah. That's awesome. That's good. We appreciate that you exercised. Anybody else? Sorry. We should wind this down.
All right. So, in closing, would you all be willing to share, like, what are your hopes? I guess, as we're finding, it's just a tool, but I think it gives us common language. You know, what are our hopes for our community as we kind of enter into this? Any thoughts?
I think for me, just basically being able to understand ourselves better, and then understanding ourselves better, I think we can understand other people better, and then are able to empathize maybe from where they're coming from, and then give us just kind of a frame of reference. And I think in the Enneagram, just I like the language of shadow and strengths rather than like kind of negative and positive, but just kind of in learning that knowing that we all have like places to grow and then things that we're good at.
Yeah, I think for me, I think we talked a little bit about this, but just the hope that our community, I think people do feel a sense of safety, and I hope that continues, especially as we engage with this and people become a little more vulnerable in talking through, and as they become a little more self-aware of some of the shadow sides of each of our own types, having that safety to feel that we can kind of heal together. I think that's kind of my hope as we engage this a little more.
Yeah, I think for a big portion of my journey, I thought love was about being a mystery, maybe. Not just mystery, like not really knowing people or being known well. And at some point that paradigm shifted to actually being about being known. And so I've been a part of communities where we get just caught on who has a membership card or who's doing certain behaviors and not doing others. So my hope in this would be, like, there's been also some anxiety about, you know, will this be used against me? If I let someone know this about me, will it be used to my detriment? And it always could be, so that's the risk. But then the other risk in the other direction is it could be used to communicate, like, a much deeper acceptance, to know, like, we all have a bunch of crap going on, and our stuff comes out in really weird ways, and we're probably doing the best we can on any given day. And even on our best day, we're really clumsy. So I hope this will deepen us as a community where we kind of would be a place where we could have each other's backs better, and communicate that acceptance, like, oh, you're just kind of being weird, Jason. That's okay. We'll love you anyway. So anyway.
When we had that staff fallout, the crisis, and then I went on a sabbatical, and then we came back, and then we were trying to piece the community back together. I think in my mind, so I grew up in a church context, and I've just heard, and also our families experienced some pretty negative things, which is, it seems like it just happens every 5 years or something. If you're in a church, something negative will happen. So I think I just thought, oh, well, it's my first one. I better brace myself for the next one. I think in my mind, that's just what I thought. And then I shared a little bit on Sunday, just because no one could give an answer. Like, how do we become formed into who we're supposed to be? And, you know, reading more stuff, you know, more willpower didn't seem to work. And I feel like the Enneagram really, for me, connects me to the heart of what I think is good news. Like, do I trust that the weakest part of me is strength? That my strength is if I allow people into my vulnerability. And then if we do that as a community, do we trust that we can actually grow and mature as human beings. And then when we hurt each other, we can, you know, forgive each other and reconcile. And, you know, we're pretty early in this journey, but it feels hopeful. And it feels like, oh, if we did this together for 20 years and got some handles on it, you know, it could actually be a healthy, still messy, but forming, growing community. And so I think that's my hope.
Well, thank you all so much for coming tonight. Let me just close us in prayer, and then please take some dessert with you as you leave. The twos do not want to take it all home. They're making stuff for people tomorrow. No, I'm just kidding. We love you. We do. And appreciate you.
We could have the eight organizer one to see which to take.
Yeah. We're going to have so much fun with this. God, thank you for this community. We thank you for the beauty that's emerging. We thank you for each person here, that you find us, somehow you find us all deeply acceptable, that you accept us without qualification. Even our darkest days, our darkest habits are not dark to you. So we thank you that you love us without qualification. And just teach us how to embrace each other more deeply as we journey. We thank you. We pray this in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.